Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Kylie Belknap, and I will be the host and moderator for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Nobel Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizens' involvement in government. Today's forum is brought to you in partnership with the Low Benyon Community Service Center. The Benyon Center fosters lifelong service and civic participation by engaging the university with the greater community in action, change, and learning. The Benyon Center's diverse programming ensures there's an opportunity for everyone to become engaged. I am specifically involved today as the moderator because I am a service learning scholar and a member of the student board of the Benyon Center. I originally got involved in the Benyon Center my sophomore year when I transferred to the U and have been involved ever since. Today we will be discussing community involvement through the Modern Dance Department. Our panelists today are Juan Carlos Claudio, Lizan, and Lynn Bobzin. Juan Carlos Claudio is an assistant professor lecturer in the Department of Modern Dance for the past 4 years. He is the director and coordinator of the Panama Dance and Culture Exchange Program, whose commitment is to develop full creative global thinkers using dance as a medium for the engagement of communities and the individual as a whole. In 2010, Lee received her Bachelor of Arts in Choreography in the Department of Dance of Nanjing Art Institute. At the same year, Lee came to America to pursue her further study of FMA degree in modern dance. Now she is a third-year graduate student and a teaching assistant in the University of Utah, Department of Modern Dance. In the future, Lee dedicates herself into dance performance, choreography, and dance education. Lynn Bobzin has a Bachelor of Arts in Theater and Dance in 2009 from Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. She is a third-year graduate student in the Department of Modern Dance at the University of Utah. She is also a university teaching assistant through the graduate school and has taught non-majors hip-hop, non-majors dance composition, modern technique for the musical theater program, and non-majors contact improvisation. We will start today with some prepared questions and then move to questions from the audience. The first question, why and how is service learning used to support learning in dance classes?
All right. Thank you for having me here. It's a great pleasure to bring a sense of what dance is about, to bridge and break stereotypes of dance as belonging to the stage, but also finding a relationship, a correlation between community service, service learning, community engagement, and dance. This is something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I teach several courses in the Department of Modern Dance, how to bridge that idea of stage dance into more of a communal and service activity. To combine theory concerning community service learning, the Department of Modern Dance at the University of Utah is highly committed to combine theory and practice in all of our courses so that close cohort of students learn together, applying what is learned within the university before moving out into the field. So that's one thing that, as a faculty, I'm committed to bridge, to give, as soon as the student enters the program, to give those opportunities through different venues, dance and community, dance and culture, service learning modern dance, and at Panama Exchange, dance and cultural exchange program that I developed last year, and we'll talk a little more about it. Also, to develop it, deep and sustainable relationships with communities, organizations, be it public or private organizations, to foster reciprocal and meaningful community engagement opportunities for the students right from entering into the program. Also, this merging dance and community gives entrepreneurial skills for our students. They have to develop grant proposals, grant writing, fundraising activities in order to make these activities happen, in order to find its means to sustain these programs. Also, to develop, one of my goals is to develop hybrid models where these collaborations between departments and adjacent academic programs, to find balance between artistic practice, scholarship, and community engagement. Another reason why we do this is to support and develop the field beyond the university walls and classroom settings. We bring inquiry in dance about what is dance in the 21st century, who or what creates it, how can we develop conceptual frameworks for social creativity. And we're also constantly questioning what is the field and how can we contribute to it globally.
Well, I think you hit it all.
Okay, we'll move on to question two. Mm-hmm. How have service learning classes in the dance department helped to address community needs?
Do
you want to start? Or do you want to talk about the Odyssey?
So we can divide it in two small little sections. Lee will cover a little bit about dance and community, and what we do, the organizations that we touch here in the city, and then we can pass it on to Lynn, which can give us a little more perspective of international and global community reach, mm-hmm. outreach.
Okay, I will start with the class I took from last semester, and this semester I'm the TA for the dance and the community class. So first the thing is, so the community in Chinese is a little bit different with the word of the meaning in English, because in Chinese the community is more like the neighborhood. So the first time I saw, dance and community, dance with your neighborhood. Oh, what is that? And then I figure out it's kind of like bring the dancers to different kind of organization. They collect the organization collects a certain people together, and then you come as a dancer, you go there to give them a serve. So from the last semester, we went to ODC House, which is we went to the ODC House, and then those kids have they are the youth, and then those kids have some problem with the drug abuse. So we went to there, and then we gave them few classes. So first time we went to there, and we kind of because we don't know what they want to learn, and then we're kind of nervous to kind of build a relationship with those youth. So we are kind of nervous when we walk into the ODC House, and we're awkward smiling, and then people walk around. And then one second, there have kids just talk to us, do you need help? And we're like, oh yeah, we come here for blah, blah, blah. And then it's kind of the ice break, because from that moment I realized it's not we are going there to help them. It's pretty much a relationship built between us and between them. So we're kind of learning from each other. And then we have such a wonderful time with them, because they will do everything we teach them to do. They will try everything they can. And then there have once I heard some information from the organizer. She said after we taught them, and then every day they're going to practice the dance, the little combo by themselves. And then there was a boy who usually played the video game all day long, and then just close his door and then play the video game all day long. But then after we taught them after the first class, and then he was always move, always willing to move, and always willing to participate, to communicate with their peers. And then from that moment I was realized finally I find some great function of dance, because in modern society a lot of people are not interested in things that cannot immediately turn to money. Mm-hmm. People have not, if that thing cannot turn to money, people have not such much tolerance to wait, mm-hmm. something can happen. But At that moment, I was so proud of myself. I learned dance. I can help people through dance. Because dance, usually dance can be kind of an exercise or kind of like an activity that you can dance everywhere. But now in modern society, we're not. Dance is kind of far away from our life now. But from that moment, I feel like we have to bring this idea back and then to pass it to more people. Yeah, that was kind of one of the greatest moment I get from last year, from the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm supposed to talk about the dance and cultural exchange that Juan developed with Anna Pasternak, the coordinator of Movement Exchange, last year, and it happens in Panama, but I kind of think I want to tail off of what you just said, because I was also a part of the dancing community course last year, and part of that class, you also have to like write a proposal to submit to a place you would like to go do basically a mini residency, where you're actually going to immerse yourself in this environment that is not your own. You know, we're out of the studio, we're out of our comfort zone, we're actually being thrust into these places where these at-risk, so-called at-risk communities sort of take place. And we're coming in there and we're supposed to provide some sort of, you know, community activity for them. And our vehicle is dance. So we picked different places. Lee and a couple other people went to the Odyssey House. And me and my partner, we actually did two. We split it in half. So we actually went to Jackson Elementary and worked with the kids in something called the Adelante program there. So we did a mini residency with the kids, but then another great thing we also did was actually on campus at the VA hospital, we taught sort of a master class for some of the veterans in this sort of small group that just come together, and they were already sort of learning different dance styles. I think they did like some like salsa lessons one day, and they did a couple of other things. So they'd already been working together, which was great. But it was really interesting because I had a really wonderful experience teaching that class with them as well. And it was also something that was sort of right here on my home base that I didn't really think of myself as a part of. So in a way, it allowed me to open up myself to being a part of new communities that exist within the same sphere that I occupy every day. So we went to the VA hospital, and this group, you know, when you think veteran, I mean, typically me, I have a very specific picture of what a veteran is. When I walked into that room, all stereotypes were completely shattered. There were people that were several years older than I was that had been off and seen war and came back and either were severely suffering from PTSD or partial blindness. There were several people that were way older and had been working in different fields in the military that were also dealing with PTSD and stress or, you know, severe things that were affecting them, sort of like obesity from depression. It spanned a variety of things. But all these people were here and they were willing to just see what we were going to do. And it was sort of a very experimental creative movement course that was wonderful because they just dove right in. They were sort of looking for an outlet, something they could use as a vehicle to express sort of all of the things they had been keeping inside. And you hear a lot of this term like interpretive dance, let's be a tree. That's not really what we do. So part of it is sort of dispelling the stereotypes with what, you know, dance and community really does. So we go in and we look for a way to help these people sort of gain better cognitive and motor skills if they are suffering from some sort of physical debilitation. We're also trying to get them to get the creative problem-solving gears turning so they can get themselves out of their head a little bit and get themselves into something that's a little bit more improvisational, something that allows them also to gain a form of exercise for some of those people who are maybe dealing with some medical conditions. But you could just tell that the energy in the room had shifted from a place that was very sort of oppressive and down into something that just sort of expanded and was open. And in that moment, it was like, okay, this thing, this work that I'm doing, this is larger than just me. Because in a way, for those experiences to exist, it takes the community. So that's part of what the class is about. What does it mean to have a community? what do different communities look like? How do different communities function? And how do we insert ourselves into those communities to not come in and say, okay, this is what we're doing, but how do we sort of join with the community and work with what we've got? It's very intriguing, and it's a very interesting thing. And I'm actually very, very fortunate to have a program that I'm in that actually gives us this opportunity to engage in translating what we do, theory and practice, into the community at large.
If you don't mind interrupting
before you go
to the Panama, I just would like to share some of the, for this year's students' objective for the different organizations. So this will give you a better sense of how big of a tool can dance be when working with diverse communities. For example, at the Odyssey House Children's Services, some of the objectives that the class have is to create a self-learning environment that is comfortable and encouraging for those participants, to provide the opportunity for children at such a young age to find a sense of place and community they live in, to enhance self-esteem, to encourage participation, enthusiasm, and creative minds, to promote cultural awareness and individuality amongst the children, to empower what could possibly be labeled as at-risk children in the future, to foster a community of trust, openness, and understanding across cultural and linguistic boundaries. At the Youth Odyssey Youth Services, some of the objectives students have come up with is to provide a sense of place and worth in the world, to enhance self-esteem, to experience dance as a form of therapy and stress release, to develop creative minds and problem solvers, to prevent clients from educational truancy, to highlight clients with a sense of worth. We're also covering this year two senior centers, the 10th East and Avalon Senior Centers. And some of the objectives students have is to find sustainability through a meaningful public service program, to lead classes with cross-cultural understandings, to encourage, rediscover, and develop further participations within physical abilities of those participants, to develop new relationships and connections between them, to encourage confidence, independence, in order for them to make personal, individual, artistic choices, and also to encourage health living. So, I mean, the amount of things that dance can do, it's just incredible. And just, it's a matter of immersing ourselves and getting to know the needs of those communities that we're working with. It's not about us teaching, but about them teaching us. So it's a cycle, it's a communication, it's a collaboration and a reciprocity that needs to happen. A sense of flexibility and sensibility and humility when we go to work with these individuals. So it's not just up teachers up here and participants down there, but how do we change to find a balance between both of our needs?
Mm-hmm. So Panama, yeah. I had the wonderful privilege to go last year, and also we just got back fresh off the plane, literally like 1 a.m. Monday. So it was magical. So what the exchange is there's this woman named Anna Pasternak, and she developed this sort of organization called Movement Exchange. Their motto is called Move to Change. And they have, I think, like a website and stuff. If anybody wants this information, you can come talk to us afterwards. We'd be happy to spread the word, because this is something we just want everybody to go and experience and get involved with. It's like, it's life-changing. So Juan sort of contacted Anna and got together, and we worked really hard to fundraise, worked our butts off to fundraise, actually. Mm-hmm. The graduate students wrote travel grants. We did everything in our power to make sure we were going to get on that plane and get to Panama to do some community service. And what it was it was like, what, 8 days? Nine days? I don't remember. It was a little over a week where we go, and Anna's there with us the whole time. And we actually stayed last year at this place called Malambo Orphanage, and it's in Arayhan, mm-hmm. Arayhan, which is across the Bridge of the Americas. So for those of you who don't know, Panama is in between Colombia and is it Costa Rica?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Panama Canal, of course, was built there. And the U.S. actually owned that country until 1991. I don't know. Don't double-check that fact.
Yeah.
Early 90s. We were in charge of that country until then. So they're fairly newly independent from us as well. So we went over there, and we stayed in Malambo. It's sort of outside Panama City. You actually have to go over across the canal and get to it. And Malambo is an orphanage that's run by like a group of Catholic nuns, and they have several houses there. And there's boys too. So mm-hmm. there are boys and girls, but they stay in separate houses. And in each one of these houses, there's like a mother of the house. But I mean, it's her job to cook for the children, cook them meals three times a day, to get them up and get them off to school and dressed, to make sure that they are clothed, yeah, to sort of discipline them. However, there's so many of these kids staying in each one of these houses, the mother can't really be a mother to these kids. They don't have, most of them are orphan children, so they don't have like that sort of mother or father figure, someone to occupy that role. Some of them do have mothers or fathers, or even more distant relatives. But since there's such a huge wealth disparity in Panama, and most of the people who are severely poor tend to be the children, and sort of like the middle-aged people, they can't afford to take care of their own kids. It's sad, but it's true. So most of them actually are sort of like charges of the state now, and they are sent off to these orphanages or these foundations and live there. And actually at Malambo, the kids go to school there as well, so they do have classrooms. But also there is one house at the base of Malambo, when you first come in, that is dedicated to infants and children under the age of 3, I do believe. There's about 20 or so. They're all HIV positive. And HIV is also something that is pretty widespread around that area as well with the at-risk populations. So, we came there, and we lived with those kids for the whole week. Mm-hmm. And we got to really, like, sleep in the bunks, and we were just, like, we were roughing it. There were no mirrors because it's Catholic-run and they're pretty strict about that. So the whole vanity issue for them, there's no mirrors. So the kids don't ever really get to even see their own reflection on a day-to-day basis. So just the fact that we showed up and we, like, could videotape them and they could get, like, instant gratification of themselves dancing, they thought that was the coolest thing ever. They all wanted to take photos with us and then see the photos. They wanted to take pictures with the camera. And they were some of the most beautiful spirits I have ever met. Most of them were way more well-behaved than some of the American children I know in my family. So it's really interesting how much you can do with so little, with almost nothing. These kids don't own all these toys. I mean, they have clothes that are basically, like, given to them, like, through donations.
Yeah.
And they don't consistently have somebody there that can just be a mentor figure to, like, play with them and look at them and be like, I see you. Mm-hmm. I see you. It's just you and me right now. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just do something. And oftentimes, he's talking about being flexible. You have to be flexible there because, first of all, I mean, we aren't fluent. I'm not fluent. I have an intermediate handle on Spanish. And that's the beauty of dance, though. You can go in and teach a class or do things with these kids and not have to explain everything. Dance transcends language in a lot of ways. So we were able to lead class, and we were making our own music and drumming because they didn't have sort of the technology to play music on the iPods or on the stereo speakers or CDs. So there's a lot of improvisation going on when we got into that community because we didn't know really what we were going to be walking into either. We were just sort of said, hey, it's really poor here. We need some people to come work with the kids. You're going to be staying at the orphanage. Cool. Had no idea. And in a way, like, we were learning from those communities as well. And it was a very humbling experience because when I came back, I almost missed it. I missed that culture a lot because there was just a vibrancy and a richness and a hunger for life and a hunger to learn, like, what we had to offer them as well that just was unparalleled here, like, in my studio classes that I felt. So we stayed at Malambo, worked with them. We also traveled around Casco Viejo, which is sort of the old city, sort of separated from Panama, the actual downtown area. And we worked with an all-boys orphanage, sort of like adolescents, Hogar de la Infancia. And that's also run by some nuns. And those boys were just amazingly rambunctious, but also they wanted to learn acrobatics and all this other cool stuff. They were just a sweet group. And then we also worked with Fundación San Felipe. Mm-hmm. So most of these are sort of like run by religious organizations as well. They sort of take up that responsibility in a way. We also got the privilege to teach classes at the University of Panama and also the Escuela Nacional de Danza, which is sort of a conservatory-like national school of dance for kids who will go to school during the day, and then since they've got money, they're a little bit more fortunate to have that opportunity for higher education. They will go to the school after classes and basically dance from like 3 p.m. onward to like 9 o'clock at night. And, of course, most of their training is based in Panamanian, like, folkloric dance. Or they'll take, like, I think, do they have African? I forget what else they take.
I think they take some modern.
Yeah, so they have some modern classes, not a lot of contemporary, because it's still a fairly new idea over there as well. But lots of ballet technique. And they're also, once again, making do with very little. Like, the facilities over there compared to the facilities we have here, we're just mind-blowing how not all the studios have mirrors. At the university, like the floor that we dance on here is called Marley, and it's usually laid really flat, and it's nice and pristine, and it's clean, and there's like gaffer's tape that's in between that keeps it all in place. They're big, like sort of like wavy rivets, and it's not taped down, so like you can trip, and they just don't have the sort of knowledge or the facilities to be doing the same kinds of things we're doing here. Also, one of the studios was just a bunch of wooden boards nailed together and had no mirrors. So it's really interesting how they're still so dedicated to learning and practicing an art that they have such passion for. And it doesn't matter to them that the space isn't as big or isn't as clean, or that they don't have the best sound system, because, hey, we can sing. It was just, it was amazing. It was amazing. So she also does open calls throughout the year, and I mean, we've kind of been talking about sustainability. Mm-hmm. So we go there, we're there for a week, and then, okay, we get on a plane and we come back to our normal lives. I mean, what change do we really do? That's the thing. When you're in a class, you may not see the fruits of your labor right away. Yeah, so for most of us, we're used to that, as Americans especially, we're used to that, like, instant gratification. I do something, it's completed, I see the results, I benefit. Yeah, right? It doesn't always happen that way in dance, because it's so fluid and it's an artistic practice, and so much of it is, like, it processed time. Afterward, yeah. That just taking the time to sit in the corner and, like, play patty cake with a kid who maybe goes ignored the entire day, or is picked on by all the other kids at the orphanage. That one moment could spur something inside of that kid that changes him for the rest of his life. You don't know, but you hope. You hope that it does. And it's just, it's really powerful because it impacts you as well. Like he said, you were learning. So sustainability. Mm-hmm. We leave, and these kids are used to being left all the time, you know? We're not the only people that come in there and say, hey, let's take a dance class, play around, see ya. They have this reservation. Any organization where you're dealing with some sort of at-risk population is going to have reservations because they maybe went through some traumatic experience or had some sort of abuse or dealt with some sort of, you know, problem in the home or don't have anyone that they're used to being really close to. They're going to be guarded. They don't like to feel vulnerable. And what dance does, in a way, is it sort of gives you space to be vulnerable, to take ownership and say, this is me, look, this is who I am. And so in a lot of ways, most of them are really reserved about it. But when you get them to open up, there's just this explosion of their personality that is so beautiful to watch. And there really aren't any words to describe it. I'm like failing to try and really convey it to you right now. It's so hard. But we leave. Part of the sustainability is the tuition we pay to the Movement Exchange Organization actually funds local teachers in the communities of these different places to continue teaching these kids classes for free all year round. So that was sort of gratifying, knowing that we're still giving even when we're not physically there. Mm-hmm. We're still allowing things to continue on and happen. And also what she does, she holds these open calls. So it's not just dance groups that can go. She has people that are non-dancers or that are from a bunch of different professions that will come in and submit, and you'll get a group together, and then you'll all go, and then you'll spend a week out there just working with the kids. And it could vary what you're doing. You know, so you don't have to go and teach them dance. You can just go and hang out with them and get to know them, maybe take them places, play with them. That's really all they really want at the end of the day, is someone to just spend some time with them. So this is totally an opportunity that's open to all of you as well. If you feel like service learning and working with these populations is something that you feel like you could really give a lot of yourself to. But that's the Panama Exchange in a nutshell. There's so much more we could talk about, but I think we also have a video later that we'll show. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have anything else you want to add about.
Well, just in terms of reciprocity, what we gain, it seems like when we come back, every evening throughout this process, either in the classroom or in this Panama Exchange, we have something we call apples and onions. The best things of your day and the challenging things of your day. So it amazed me how the students change from day one to day eight, day 10. You know, they learn so much from each other. Watching each other and teach, the teaching philosophies, the strategies, all these things come to a conversation at a dinner table. And towards the end, you can see how even those university students who go with a sense of, I'm there to teach and only teach and teach right and left, kick, up and down, they just come transformed with a sense of there's a malleability and permeability and transparency of teaching and communication that it's beautiful to watch once upon their return. So we come changed as well. We go with that idea of changing people's lives, but we come changed ourselves. So,
yeah. Great, thank you. Well, let's do one more question. What do students benefit from doing a dance course as service learning versus a regular course?
Do you want
to
talk about that?
Which question
is
that?
Sorry, we skipped
to
number
5. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going to leave that to the students because I think they can answer that. What are your benefits?
This is a question I remember that I asked Wang in the first class when we take that class. I was like, what's the difference between the regular class and go to the community class? Hmm. And then after those experience, I feel like each organization or each community, they have their own characteristics. And you go there, you're kind of, like, because in the regular class, we pay the teacher money. And then we have the response to give them the knowledge, whatever they want to learn or not. I just throw off these things to you. And then it's your responsibility to take off those knowledges for yourself. But in that community experience, I feel like it's more like, because, for example, when we go to an ODC house, those kids cannot literally physical touch each other. So we have to think some way to let them have the interaction with each other, but without really touch. And then also, we cannot mention a lot of things, but when we want to let them have the quality change of movement, what we can see. So we decide, okay, we just choose something really basic and relate to their life. So we're kind of ask them, what's your favorite food? And some people say jelly. Okay, now do a jelly movement across the floor. And they are so creative. And you can see those non-dancers, they are I feel like they're even more creative than us. And then I remember there was a guy who was like, and he even made sound effects. And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. And then also we kind of like ask them to throw the energy ball to each other. So they kind of have the interaction with each other, but not like literally touch. So those things is a limitation for us as a teacher. That is a limitation, but that is also explored a lot of possibilities from that group. So that's another way how we learn from them, from respect to their life, their rules, and then bring our knowledge to them, but not let them feel, oh, this is awkward, I cannot do this, I don't want to touch. In that class, I'm not like require them, you have to hug each other or you have to touch each other. But we kind of like respect their situation. So you don't need to do that if you don't want. But is there anything that you can challenge yourself with your situation? And then when they see themselves as a creator, they kind of find another side of themselves as well. So they kind of find the self-value of themselves because it's not normal if people ask you what is your favorite food and then do that movement of your favorite food. So this dance class actually kind of gives them opportunity to explore themselves as well, to do something they don't usually do, but it's not like an awkward way.
You know, for me, the benefits of having service learning courses, it's that the students are, they're ready. They're ready to tackle the world. Yeah. They're ready. They have the tools. Sometimes too much structure brings rigidity. Mm-hmm. So to me, it allows these opportunities of service learning courses allows the student to be ready after graduation. I have the practice, I have the theory, I'm interested in the next step of researching what this is all about. So to me, just seeing, I know I can send this, my students can graduate from the program, and I know they're not going to end up at Burger King flipping burgers. I know they're going to find their way, they're going to be creative minds to know what to do with dance, movement, teaching, choreographing, performing, photography, writing, becoming critics. And I think service learning and community engagement, that's what it provides. I wish every course at the university has a component with some sort of a community and practice where they have to bridge the four walls of the classroom mm-hmm. to get hands-on of how the world works. So. I just want to share, Lynn, if you don't mind reading a letter. This is coming from the manager at the Odyssey House. So you get a different perspective from an inside perspective of this organization and what dance and movement has done for them.
Do we have time?
Okay. So I'm going to read this letter for you. My name is Jenna Potter, and I am a supervisor at Odyssey House of Utah's Adolescent Substance Abuse Treatment Program. Adolescents often have difficulty expressing themselves, but compounded with mental health concerns and substance abuse, it can become an extraordinary challenge. Since beginning a partnership with the University of Utah Department of Modern Dance, the impact of exposing our residents to dance in its many forms has been immediately apparent. A majority of our clients come from cultural and low-income backgrounds and have never been exposed to dancing outside clubs and parties. Creating a new perception of dance and what it can be used for has been invaluable to our clients. Our clients have had the opportunity to learn a wide range of dance styles, including ballet, Asian fan dancing, and even line dancing. In general, the classes in dance have inspired a dramatic increase in confidence and a camaraderie amongst our clients. Each style has brought with it added benefits on top of that. During ballet, I witnessed our residents accepting themselves for their efforts while attempting the technical difficulty and then celebrating their victories for doing something so difficult to master. Hip-hop, which before had been so descended into inappropriate dance moves in our facility, had been, except under staff supervision, was taught by the university students in such a way that our clients could take the music they love so much and start building new experiences and ways to express themselves appropriately through it. Dance as a communication tool is often a new concept to most of our clients and has been incredibly effective since it doesn't run into the same roadblocks expressing things verbally does. It is so rewarding to observe someone who had such difficulty the day before describing what they were feeling use their body movement to demonstrate to us what they are feeling. The feeling of emotional release in the dance classes is absolutely palpable. It is a privilege to observe the dance students instruct and open these communication lines with our clients. The university students have enthusiasm and have individually tailored their classes to meet our needs. This has made all the difference, and I am impressed with the professionalism and well-planned routines that challenge but do not discourage our clients. Our clients always talk about the dance class and find time to practice the routines in the day afterwards. A comment I hear often is that classes have changed the way they view what dancing can be, and this has really opened their minds to possibilities for movement and expression. This has opened up new avenues for us to explore as a therapeutic group because we were able to apply these new ways of thinking and skills to our other therapeutic interventions. These classes have provided an incredible service to our clients in helping them progress and find peace in their treatment. We have been exceedingly fortunate to be able to host this community partnership. Thank you, Jenna Potter, Support Staff Coordinator, Odyssey House Adolescent Program. Share that one too.
Sure. Oh. From
a client. Client perspective on the dance classes. During these dance classes, I have found that requests for certain styles have been treated with the utmost respect. The few classes I have been in have helped me in my self-confidence. When I struggle with getting my coordination, I receive great tips on how to learn, and I am never put down. It has also been helpful when each of the steps of the dance has been broken down to my level in ways I can understand, such as, quote, rowing the boat. Through dance, I have been able to express my hurt feelings in an appropriate manner. Sincerely, Brian.
So this is, we've been with this organization for 4 years. So this is, to give you an idea what sustainability does when you continue your work. So it's not just one time, it's that desire to continue forging relationships and sustaining those relationships.
Great, thank you. We will devote the remainder of the time to questions from the audience. Please speak directly into the microphone, state your name and your major.
What is that?
My major is psychology. So my question for you is, you found all these great things, psychological and physical, that can help be therapeutic towards the people who participate in them. So my question is, how are you going to approach the problem of stereotypical ideas towards dance as in general, especially in places like America?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting. That's one of the... I wrote down some... my personal perspective of dance, and I think one of the, there's been a hysteria of dance, it's a human need. We need to move, or movement, I call it. We need to move. And we've used sports to satisfy that human need that we have. And we left behind dance or movement, which is, we're born with it. It's cultural in us. So one of my goals is, using programs like this to expose to diverse communities, privileged communities, that what dance, the vitality that dance has and the opportunities that we can present dance as a different form, different aesthetic, different... it's my hope, just doing programs like this, it's my hope that people start joining in. And staying positive, optimistic about things, I think it's the key. Mm-hmm. And that becomes contagious. Yeah, optimism and... Yeah.
My name is Ola Mato, and I'm a health society and policy major.
And my question was, as you guys go international to the Panama orphanage, what was the culture shock like? Well, not only are you going international, but you're also doing an international service learning project. What is the difference between that and the Odyssey House? How are you able to adapt to it? And
you know,
what was the process like?
Yeah, I just give you a little, and then I think the students are the best person to answer. I speak Spanish, so there's a little bit of a lead way bridging that cultural. So before I tell them pretty much how the culture is, this is some of the expectations when you go there. But I'm just amazed that by the second day, the students are counting in Spanish. They're giving keywords in Spanish, arriba, abajo, right and left. By the end of the time, all I have to do is just sit and watch this incredible transformation. And it's provided by movement. First start moving. Really big. So using the body to enhance the inability to use words. And then they come to me, I was trying to tell them to dance big. I said, you're grande, grande. So then they attach that grande, grande word to the physical action. That. About?
I don't know if I had a severe shock as much as some of the students that didn't know anything about the culture or the language beforehand. I think some of them really struggled with the inability to communicate, and that was where the most hang-ups were. It wasn't that, oh my gosh, we're in this new place and we don't know the surroundings and we're like, we're the other, like we are the other here now. We're not, you know, in our home country. It wasn't that. I think it was the inability to communicate, because you really want to make that connection, and you want to be able to have the interactions with the kids before and after class, teaching SNI. But when they come up to you and then they start asking you all of these questions in Spanish and you can't respond but you really want to, I think that's the hardest part of it, because you want to be able to just fully engage. But as far as culture shock goes, I mean, you step off that plane, boom, you are fully immersed and you almost have no choice. I don't know how you would be able to go there and do it and make it through the week resisting all of the culture. I think it would be almost impossible. You just have to go and be fully open to the experience, and you're there, and it's okay, let's just jump in and do it. And literally, you get off the plane, you go put your stuff away in the hostel for the night, the one night you stay there, and then the next morning it's boom, we get up at 7 a.m., we're on a bus, we're going to the university, you're teaching here and here, then we're going to Hogar de la Infancia, and you're teaching an hour and a half class with the kids there, then we're going to eat lunch on the bus really quick, and then it's just choo, 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 go, 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 all day long. You have no choice to stop and think about I don't know how to handle this. Yeah. You just have to do it.
It's amazing. By
you just have to do it.
Yeah. That's the best advice. By the last day, we're going over things that we did, and we're like, wow. We didn't even realize that we've done so much in such little time. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could articulate the culture shock. I think the one thing that I had the most, the hardest time, I guess, swallowing in a way, was going and working with these kids and then knowing that I had to leave. And having to sever the ties, wanting to be close with them, but also knowing that I had to, in a way, find some sort of distance in order for me to, be able to function. it's so difficult, because they just, one little girl, one of the students that went with us, really, this one little girl really took to her. We were at our last day, Aldea, mm-hmm. this past week, and just wanted to be held. That's all she wanted. She didn't want to dance. That's fine. Not all the kids. You can't get all of them to dance. You do what you can when you're there, right? You assess the moment and you try your best. That's all you can do. And this little girl was just wrapped around her, and she was holding her, and there was salsa music on, and everyone's partnering, and she's just swaying with this little girl, off in the corner. And that was enough for that little girl. That's what she needed in the moment. And in a way, it's just sort of you have no choice but to give into that. Mm-hmm. We had to peel them apart when it was time for us to go. I mean, as far as culture shock goes, yes, it's a different culture, but that basic need for connection, or assessing what these populations need, is sort of a universal level, in a way. It's in a way, what we're doing it doesn't matter the culture, because it's almost instinctive for most of them, and you can relate just by showing up and being present and engaged with them. I mean, you can do that anywhere with anybody, I think.
In terms of our students, something in terms of time, it's Latino culture is so much more fluid. So that's something where I saw people, are we teaching just for 30 minutes, 45 minutes? Are we going to eat? Where are we going to eat? When do we eat? I'm like, time doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's here. Very
we
fluid.
Just go with the flow, do our thing. When we get to eat, we'll eat. Just so I think that's one of the probably difficult things for some of our students, that idea that you have to live life with this
schedule.
And there's no schedule. Schedule is what you do and when you do it and how you do it. So fluid.
And we'll take
just two questions. My name is Erica Martinez. I'm a sophomore here at the university. And my first one is, the fruits of your labor can disappear after time. So after leaving these communities where you did your semi-residency that you mentioned, how do you plan to keep the people who participated involved or engaged in dance? And the second question that I have is, how diverse is the population that participates in those activities?
In terms of dance and community, the class that I teach here at the university, I try to, every year, to partner with the same organizations and perhaps add one or two additional ones. It's a small class, so unfortunately, most of the time, I have 13 in line, and all we can do is 5 or 6 of them. Yeah. So I try to reach back to those organizations, so that idea of sustainability. And in terms of diversity, how diverse those communities are, they're very, very diverse. I try to challenge our students, not just to go to privilege situations, but I just try to reach what is that, how diverse are those communities are in terms of rehabilitation center, the children's services at the Odyssey House. So there's a lot of language, ethnically and culturally diverse. Last year we worked with Heartland Center, which is a refugee. Mostly Somalian kids. So I try to find not the general
population. Yeah.
But yeah. And
thank you. If you'd like to become further involved in our community, please participate in our next Saturday service project, April 20th, at Bend in the River, or enroll in a community-engaged learning class. For details, please visit the Benyon Center website at benyoncenter.org. We please join me in thanking our panelists for coming today.